is God's blessing us. So this is a good week. Our two elders that were over there harassing each other. Good week, bad week, or so-so. Chuck.
So-so. I had, I guess I'm trying to make a longer story short. I wasn't planning on going out of town this week. And about 10 o'clock Sunday night, I was settling in, and I get a note from the program manager saying, I'm going to be there tomorrow in Cecil Field. So I'm doing my plans to travel. Next day is stay Monday night at a hotel, and I'm tired. The day goes by, you know, I left early in the morning, day goes by, I go to check in a hotel after I had eaten with the program manager, so it was 10 o'clock at night, and they said, I'm sorry, we don't have your reservation. I said, yeah, you do. I pulled it up, and they said, that's for tomorrow.
Oh.
So I didn't have anywhere to stay. And I said, okay, it's 10:15 at night, I could try to go through my it was hard to book a hotel a day before, and I'm saying, I'm probably not going to get one. So I drove home from Jacksonville, got 4.5 hours sleep, and then hit the road again and got back up there the next day for the next day. So that made it kind of a so-so day.
So-so, yeah. Definitely so-so.
April.
Yeah. Got to have two more. Good week, bad week, so-so. Charlie, you moved. Does that mean you?
No.
Okay. Is that good?
I have a similar
situation,
except at the ending where he got in the car and drove back, I stomped my feet a few times there because I got in at midnight, storm, etc. And I had the reservation guaranteed, the guy paid for it and everything. So what happened? The manager had to give up his house next door. And he says, that's it. So I stepped in his house, his bed.
Ooh, that's a, yeah.
It worked out good.
I did that.
Gotta have one more. I'm not bashful, I'll call on you. Mike Wall, good week, bad week, so-so.
I've had one bad week and I've decided I'll never have another bad week again.
Good for you.
Good.
All right, good for you. How many of you tried to complete your assignment? One, two. How many knew we had an assignment? All right. Anybody want to take a shot at who this is supposed to represent?
Abraham.
Job. And Job, what's he like? Rich, good man. The patience of Job, good. He feared God.
There's a man who God knew. He had a lot of faith in God.
He did.
And God, that's why God said he offered up Satan. I know this man has a lot of faith. And shaking his faith is going to be really, really tough.
Yeah. I've studied a lot of things that I didn't know about him. He's not a Hebrew. Wrong name. If he's a Hebrew, his three friends are not Hebrews. So this is told by an author. Anybody know who wrote the book of Job? Nope. And that's what it is. Nobody knows who wrote the book of Job. So in the land of Uz, how do you say it? Or Uz. Either one, lived a man whose name was Job. This man was blameless and upright. He feared God, shunned evil. He had 7 sons and 3 daughters. He owned 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 yoke of oxen, and 500 donkeys, and had a large number of servants. He was the greatest man among the people of the East. Yeah, the Hebrew word would be pronounced Uz, but we're going to get into some Hebrew words here in a little bit. Okay.
When it says among
the people of the East, what does that mean? It means the people of the East. I don't know what you're asking. Yeah, that means that these friends have been a distance away. And that could be because... Yeah. I don't know. Okay. Check.
Since this is Uz, Abraham was from Ur.
I'm going to give your car a low tire so you really have to spend time.
I can't find it right now, and I apologize for that, but in Lamentations, it tells you where Uz is.
It tells you where Uz is. Okay. He is... He's got 7 men and 3 daughters. And he is so devoted to them that he makes sacrifices for his kids. Because he doesn't know if his kids have done something wrong during the week or not. So he just goes out and makes sacrifices. Not a bad dad. Somebody like to read. Okay, so what's he running on? What's his worldview? That might be...
If we sin, God will curse you.
If you sin, God will curse you. Bad stuff's going to happen to you if you sin. So you got to get rid of all the guilt of sin. And that's what he's doing. He's getting rid of the sin on his kids so that he's okay. And then God sets up a meeting. On one day, the angels came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan also came with them. And the Lord said to Satan, "Where have you come from?" Satan answered the Lord, "From roaming throughout the earth, going back and forth in it." And then the Lord said to Satan, "Have you considered my servant Job? There is no one in the earth like him. He is blameless and upright and a man who fears God and shuns evil." Now,
I've got a question.
Sure.
Job
It's probably a wisdom book, which means it doesn't have real time. It was written so they could learn a lesson. Okay? Here's your first Hebrew word. We say Satan. If you were Hebrew, it comes out Satan. That's a word right out of the Hebrew. Let me give you another one just so you can throw that around and they'll think you're really good. Adam. Anyone want to take a chance what Adam means?
Man.
It's just Adam, man. And that's where the words come from a lot of times when it comes to translations. This is Satan. And Satan or Satan, either way you want to go, when you translate it into what it really means, it means accuser or persecutor. That's his job. That's what his whole existence is about. So he looks at them and he says, well, does Job fear God for nothing? Have you not put a hedge around him and his household and everything he has? You have blessed the work of his hands so that his flocks and herds are spread throughout the land. But stretch out your hand and strike everything he has, and he will surely curse you to your face. And the Lord said to Satan, well, very well, then. Everything he has is in your hands, but on the man himself do not lay a finger. And then Satan went out from the presence of the Lord. This meeting in the Old Testament of God and his angels, it's pretty much there a lot. I was hoping Mike O'Neill would be here because he could give you a lot that they sat down and said, oh, well, how's it going? And the angels would give an account. So what's he want? Job, who looks like a Job? You look like a Job. You can be Job. Okay. Jim is Job. And what does he want to happen to Job? What does Satan want to happen to Job? Notice the first clash is between God and Satan. He hasn't touched anybody yet. And God brags on Job, and Satan decides, you know.
Satan questions his Job's motives.
Good. That's perfect. Did everybody hear her? No. He's challenging Job, and he's not challenging Job. Satan is challenging God, saying, if you just let him get rid of his stuff, he'd curse you to your face. So the first thing is, let's get rid of all the stuff that Job has. He has a lot of stuff. He has children. He has cattle. He has sheep. He has houses. He has servants. And Satan's sitting back and saying, you know what? He's serving you. You got him paid off. If you didn't pay him off so much and give him so much stuff, he wouldn't serve you. Chuck.
This philosophy you've got up there has permeated God's people, and it's been a problem even since back to the time of Job.
Yeah.
Because obviously during the New Testament, when they brought a man who was crippled or blind, he said, well, who sinned, this man or his parents? He said, none of them did. He's blind because it gave an opportunity for me to show the power of God. But it's that mindset, and Satan's trying to leverage it to say, okay, if things are going well, then you're going to be faithful, and if things are going bad, you're not going to be faithful. And he's trying to show God.
Yeah. you're going to lose everything you've got. You're going to lose your cattle. You're going to lose your kids. You're going to lose your sheep. You're going to lose your oxen. Now, let me say this emphatically now, so I don't miss it. That is not God. There's a popular theory that goes around that goes something like this. God rewards the good, and you evil people, he gets you. It makes bad stuff come in your life. Might be a good saying, it's just not true. That's not how God works. Paul.
That was the discussion that Jesus had with Peter in John chapter 9. Peter sees the blind guy and he said, okay, whose fault was it? Him or his parents?
Yeah. Because he
has to be blind as a punishment for something.
So that's very important because we kind of believe this. I get people who come in all the time saying, I must have done something terrible. And I ask, well, why? Well, this week's been terrible. And they believe it's because it's their fault because they didn't do good stuff that God thought was good. That's not God. Mike.
That actually has a fancy name. It's called the theology of retribution, where God gives you what you deserve.
Yeah.
So if you're good, you get what's good, and if you're bad, you get what's bad. And the interesting thing is that's what his friends are going to say, too. You know, you must have sinned because all these bad things are happening, and the book is written specifically to combat that.
Yes.
You know, but even Satan is saying, well, of course he's good because you're good to him. You know what I mean? So Satan is actually questioning God. Can you get somebody, is there anybody out there who will love you just for you, or do you have to bribe everybody to love you?
Yeah. Okay, so we're back with Satan. One day, Job's sons and daughters are feasting and drinking wine at the older brother's house, and a messenger comes to Job saying, the oxen were plowing and the donkeys were grazing, and the Sabaeans attacked and carried them off. They put the servants to death by the sword, and I'm the only one who has escaped to tell you. And while he was speaking, another messenger came and said, the fire of the Lord fell from the sky and burned up the sheep and the servants, and I'm the only one left who has escaped to tell you. So first, they're taking your cattle away. The Sabaeans come and get it. Second, lightning falls from the sky. Anyone want to talk about the third one? Your kids were celebrating a feast together, all 10 of them. And a wind came up, and the house collapsed, and they're all gone. I think that would be awful painful. And Job, anybody know what Job says?
Lord giveth and the Lord taketh away, blessed be the name of the Lord.
Yeah. The Lord giveth, the Lord taketh away, blessed be the name of the Lord. The Chaldean raiding party comes down. And he takes all the camels and he carries them off. And they put the servants to the sword. And I'm the only one left to tell you. And while he was speaking, another messenger came and talked about feasting and at the brother's house, and suddenly the mighty wind comes in and it corners and it collapses. And the servant says, I am the only one left to tell you. Now, if that is what he wants you to see, he had a lot of servants beginning. They're gone too. Each one's coming out and saying, I'm the only one left to give you the bad news. how would you feel about serving God if you had a calamity like this?
I don't think I would fall down and move.
You?
In verse 20.
Okay. Anybody else? How do you think he felt? Mike?
Well, not to answer your question directly, but you know, this is Job when he says the Lord gives and the Lord takes away. Sometimes we quote that as if God says, but God didn't say that. Job said that in his misery. And maybe we can understand that, but it's not true. God did not take them away.
Right. God didn't take them away.
I want to agree with that, but the thing is about this book makes no ifs, ands, or buts that God is in charge of this whole scenario that's unfolding. Because God gives Satan every bit of his power and says, okay, round one, you can take his stuff, don't touch the man. Round two, you can hurt the man, but don't take his life. So God even sets the parameters through which Satan is allowed. You know, so it actually undermines the entire book if you don't put the responsibility of everything that happens on this book on God's shoulders. It actually, and I know that we as Christians, we want to protect God, so to speak. But the real question to this book is, if you lose everything that matters to you, is God enough by himself for you to love him? That's why the Satan is accusing Job, and God for that matter. Job only loves you because you give him all this stuff and you protect him. Look at the big hedge. Look how you bless him.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I wish that I could go with the whole God didn't cause this, but this book, if you take that away from this book, you undermine the integrity of the entire writing. Because after chapter 2, Satan is gone. And if you start looking as early as chapter 4, I think, especially in chapter 9, Job is accusing God of everything that happens to him.
Yeah, we'll get there. Chuck, did you help?
Well, we'll see where it goes, but I disagree,
Okay.
Somebody want to read? Okay. See that phrase, skin for skin? Let's see if I can bring it up to date.
Okay, but you know what else? Right there in verse 8 it said, you incited me to ruin him for no reason. That's God speaking, saying that he takes responsibility right in that verse, in the last slide.
Okay.
He's taking responsibility right there.
Okay. Okay. What do we look at verse 4? That's what I wanted to do. He's saying Job didn't want the stuff. It wasn't that important to him. But you strike him down with illness, he'll quit. Because it's easy if you just got stuff, but the stuff is gone. So now, why don't you ruin his health? Okay, everybody sees that. What happens to him? Jim's going to demonstrate it. Boils are going to come out all over your body. And then you're going to have to go and break some pots, because the only way you get relief is by scratching yourself with cracked pots. The ceramics that didn't make it. That's a kind of miserable existence.
But it shows that battle between Satan is having over us, trying to get us to turn on God. Satan's battle is, can I get Job to turn on God?
Uh-huh.
He has that same battle with us. What can cause you or I to turn on God, to leave God, to quit being faithful to God, to quit loving God, to quit serving God?
Okay. Did you all hear that? Because I can't remember that much tonight. Okay, so he's pretty sick. And now his friends come. I had a lot of friends with these three, because Michelle, when she was first pregnant, said, I'm going to give him a biblical name, Dad. Do you have any biblical names? I said, Zophar's a biblical name. She said, no, I want somebody that doesn't, you don't find any of them. I said, you won't find any Zophars out in even in Illinois. And she says, you're no help at all, Dad. But there are three of them. When they come, the first thing they do is they sit with him and keep their mouths shut. They're supporting him through the struggle. Then they get to the point that they're throwing him around. They're trying to find what Job did wrong to cause all this. And the middle chapters of the book of Job is, you've sinned. And Job says, no, I haven't. And they said, yes, you have. And when they can't put their finger on it, they decide to make up their own lists. And they start just throwing things out that don't apply to Job at all, but they're throwing them out there just seeing if they can catch one on. Because if they can find one on, they'll know what Job needs to repent of to get it all back. They're not too good at what they're doing. They're not comforting at all. Chuck?
But I think they're well-meaning.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're really trying to say, you need to get back in your right relationship with God. And from their perspective, and you kind of saw it with Job. When he gets to it, he says, just tell me what I did wrong. But they are his friends. I mean, they're sitting there with him. Not a lot of comfort when they keep saying, what did you do wrong? What did you do wrong? Don't hear about him getting any cream for his boils or anything like that. So not a lot of help, but some.
Mm-hmm. Where would you be if you were Job? Please be patient and listen to what I say. Remember how your words have guided and encouraged many in need. But now you feel discouraged when struck by trouble. You respect God and live right, so don't lose hope. No truly innocent person has ever died young. In my experience, only those who plant seeds of evil harvest trouble. And then they are swept away by the angry God.
This is
his friend speaking. You wouldn't be in the fix that you're in. I've known a lot of people, but I haven't known anybody your age who was ready just to give up. Aren't you glad you came to this class tonight? They may roar, they may growl like powerful lions, but when God breaks their teeth, they starve and the children are scattered. The human action that they're looking for is they're encouraging Job to do good. Why? Because if you do good, good things happen. And if you do evil, God will punish you. That's still their philosophy. Reason bad stuff's happening, Job, is you're still irritating God. Okay? Everybody's got what he's been saying. Job finally has enough. He's had enough. And he says, if God would come down here, I'd give him a piece of my mind. And then he does. It's a thunderstorm. And out of the thunderstorm, Job hears a voice. And the voice answers, who is this that darkens my counsel with words without knowledge? Brace yourself like a man, and I'll question you, and you shall answer me. Where were you when I laid the foundation? Tell me if you understand. When I was making the world, where were you? You didn't instruct me then on how to do it. You didn't say do this and this and that and that. And you don't know how this comes together. Job, you're talking about stuff that you don't know. You're just talking. Who marked off the world's dimensions? Surely you know. Who stretched the measuring line across it? On what were the footing set or laid it as cornerstone? The morning stars sang together and the angels shouted for joy. Who shut up the sea behind the doors when it burst forth from the womb? When I made the cloud its garment and wrapped it in thick darkness. When I fixed limits for it and set doors and bars in place. Somebody want to give me a rough translation? God's sitting there saying, Joe, how come you don't get flooded out by the ocean? I set an obstacle there so the ocean only goes so far. Where were you when I did that? Where were you when I sat down and looked at the way the world was going to work, by what principles? You weren't there to argue it out with me. You weren't there giving me good words. Where were you? Now, what God's doing is this. He's sitting back saying, you're doing good in your limited knowledge. But boy, is it limited. You're from a little town called Uz, or Ooze. Either one is good. My wife told me it was Uz, and I kept saying I was going to use Ooze, so we're playing off each other. That's his world. That's all he knows. And God would say, look at what the world really has out there. Look at the stars. Tell me how they got there. Tell me how they're placed. Tell me why they come out at night. And he says, our world, you got to look at the intricacies, the little things. And when you look at the little things, you all of a sudden go, whoa. This guy's got a lot of knowledge. Are we good? Can you raise your voice to the clouds and cover yourselves with a flood of water? Do you send the lightning bolts on their way? Do they report to you? Here we are. Do you endow the heart with wisdom or give understanding to the mind? Who has the wisdom to count the clouds? Who can tip over the water jars of heaven? And when the dust becomes hard and the clods of the earth stick together, do you hunt the prey for the lioness and satisfy the hunger of the lions when they're crouching in their den or lying in a thicket? Can you tell me how the weather works? Official statistic came out last year. Guys who report your weather are accurate 49% of the time. They don't even get 50-50. It's 49% of the time. They still can't do it. And God's pointing that out. Who are you to come up and tell me what I should do and the way I should live and the way I should be? What I should have done? The things, what would you change? When it gets dry, you pray for rain, and I give it to you. He's sitting there saying, you think you're really smart and got it all figured out. You really don't. And he uses this stand all the way through. Now, he talks about the behemoth. The behemoth is one of those things that's in Scripture. It's up there, 40:15-17. Some people say it was a large elephant. So that picture may be totally off, is what I'm telling you. It may be large elephants. But if you ever tried to stop a large elephant, you're not going to stop him too easy. You can't say, whoa there, guy, and have him stop. He's just going to go through you. So he said, you can't even control an elephant or a being. You can't control them. And you come here and try to tell me how to run things? This is the Leviathan. And he sits there and he says about it, can you pull in the Leviathan with a fish hook and a tie and his tongue? Could you put a cord through his nose or pierce his jaw with a hook? Will he keep begging you for mercy? Will he speak to you with gentle words? Will he make an agreement with you to take him as your slave for life? This critter, as long as you were good about feeding him and not going in certain areas, he doesn't pop up. But he uses a lot in Isaiah to talk about things out of control. Okay, so far so good. Here's one of the biggest lessons I want you to take home. You cannot exist in a perfect world. Bad things are going to happen to good people. God was telling Job, I haven't made it to just reward the good and punish the bad. That's not how our world's designed. So if you can accept that that's what God did, he has a world that we are on, and this world isn't perfect, that means we aren't either, because we are part of the world. Now where we get in trouble is we think we know the answer. Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we know more. Paul?
One of the ways we trap ourselves is with our prayers, because if the result of our prayer isn't exactly the way we anticipated that we wanted it to be, then we either say, well, it just wasn't God's will, or we say, I must have done something wrong before I got on my knees. In other words, we try and excuse what happened as it must have been something went wrong with the prayer.
Yeah.
Because prayers are supposed to work, and it's not designed perfectly, the system that we have. It's very complicated. And
no point in trapping yourself.
Right.
Pray, you ask God, and you ask him to work with whatever the outcome is to his glory and to our benefit. And that's about as good as it gets.
Yeah, that is exactly how good it gets.
Well, it gets better than that.
It gets better than that, okay.
God says, and it's very well printed in the Holy Scriptures. I don't call it a Bible. It's the Holy Scripture. God says, whatsoever you do, and you call out me in the name of my Son, Emmanuel, I will do it.
Okay.
If it is holy and righteous.
Okay. Can you see how this fits? We don't live in a perfect world. My grandmother lived until she was 86 years old, died very unexpectedly. She had cancer. They said the cancer wouldn't hit her for 7 years. She died the first year. And it tore me up, and I was going over to my Aunt Pearl's where all the food was and the stuff, and I was giving Sue grief, and I said, why now? Why'd she die now? And Sue said, why not? Uh-huh. Yeah. But she finished it with, when would it be acceptable to you to lose your grandmother? It never would have been. Okay. Okay.
We can pray, though, and we can ask God for anything we think we need. And the end of our prayer should be in that it's your will, not mine.
Okay, good. I'm done now. It went good. Next week, I think we're having a devotional since it's the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, and everybody's going to be cooking. No, I'm not cooking. It's supposed to be Thanksgiving. Believe me, if I cook, Sue would not be thankful. Thanks for coming and thanks for listening.